Hello and welcome to the Empathy for Breakfast show. I am Mimi Nicklin and I am your host of a show that travels the world talking to people from all corners of our planet about empathy, about our ability to connect and to understand each other and how that is changing our world. These conversations won't only unpack the amazing power of empathy in our societies and our businesses, but they will remind us that we are all far more alike than we are different. I believe that there has never been a better time to talk about empathy, to talk about our need to reconnect as people, as human beings. The more the world talks about empathy, the more empathy the world will have. So let's get talking. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Empathy for Breakfast show. Today, my guest Marissa Latshaw is here to talk about all things marketing and empathy, and you're soon going to see exactly why I've invited her onto the show. She's an experienced marketer and the creator of the empathetic positioning process, which is a fascinating approach to how we bring empathy into our marketing teams. She's passionate about helping marketing leaders activate empathy to develop brands and products and messages that truly inspire action. And her inclusive approach to qualitative audience research, as well as strategic positioning, has created lasting results for organizations big and small across all kinds of industries. She's doing some phenomenal work, and I can't wait to have this conversation. So Marissa, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Mimi. I am so thrilled to be here with you talking about empathy.
Could it be a better match? Two people that are so passionate about this. And I'm so happy that we met on LinkedIn, my favorite platform, over such a shared passion. So let's start with that passion. We both love it. We both talk about it. What does empathy mean to you?
I believe that empathy is our superpower. I just think we are all born with this ability to feel, understand, and respond to one another. And it's really what connects all of us. And I know you talk about that a lot in your book too. So we really need to tap into this empathy now more than ever to heal our world. And as you did note in the book, we're facing a severe empathy deficit. I mean, just open the news on any given day and you see it in our, you know, in everything that's playing out around the world and in our lives. And I'm a marketer. So I ask myself, you know, what can I do to help bring more empathy to the world? So I look at our organizations and our brands and our products and our services as these collective powerhouses for empathy, because they're all made up of individuals that have all of this capacity for empathy. So I really believe we need to activate this empathy in our organizations. And it's not only, it's better for the people you serve, actually better for business, which I think we'll probably talk about today. And ultimately, it's better for the world.
Oh, absolutely, isn't it? I mean, it is absolutely better for the world. And as a marketer as well, and a creative person, I love that you are talking about it in this space because, you know, we sit behind so much data now, and I'm not anti-data at all. But we do increasingly rely on that data to drive our insight and our decisions about the human beings, you know, buying our products. So how do we fit this in? What's the role of empathy in marketing? How do we overcome that?
Well, I'm sure you'd agree that marketing is both art and science. And in my career, you know, I have seen just over the past 20 years that the science side of marketing, the technology has just exploded. And I think many of us have been seduced into measuring and tracking everything and communicating on digital platforms. And these are all good things. But I do think that if we over aggregate people into data, then we really run the risk of losing sight of the humanity, of the human connection, of that art side of marketing. I know I want to be treated like a person and not a persona. And I think that's just a really important point that underscores the empathetic work that I'm doing, the work that you're doing, that we really want to be seen and heard and understood. And I really love in your book when you talk about empathy as a data point. When I read that, my brain just went, woo, like she's onto something. This is exactly spot on. And with the work I'm doing, I'm always measuring the outcomes of empathy. So when every strategy starts with empathy, you are designing it toward an outcome. And my mission in the world and everything I'm doing is that I wanted to see every business and every marketing plan start with empathy. I think that when that is built in, then really we are on our way to better business results, better outcome for the people we serve, and ultimately ultimately the world we want to live in, right?
I mean, yes, absolutely. 100%, absolutely. it seems, you know, and when I hear you say it like that, it just seems like such an obvious but powerful move. And in many ways, a move back to where we came from. Because if you sort of think of the marketing directors of perhaps 25, 30 years ago, I think they got this. I think they got the human in the process and starting with the human. And I even think when I started my career, which was on Procter & Gamble brands, how much time at sort of 22 years old, I was spending in focus groups doing exactly that, Marissa, understanding the human. So that predominantly in this season of my life, we were talking to housewives and predominantly to understand the housewife, which today sounds like a very old fashioned, very sort of stereotypical form. But at that time, that was how we did marketing. But yes, there was a real focus on that human being, whereas today, perhaps we've lost that. So you've developed the empathetic positioning process. What is that? Does that overcome this? Is this something clients can use to go back to the future, as it were?
Yeah, in some ways, yeah, we are in some ways going back to the future. And in some ways, I think inventing a new future, one that is more centered on the individual human experience. And it's where I think the technology piece marries up with the human piece, right? So I created this process because I want to bring marketers closer to their customers. I've sat in many organizations where the salespeople, the customer service people, sometimes some parts of marketing, let's say social media, they have day-to-day contact, one-on-one contact with individuals. But marketers are often looking at, you know, customer behavior more in aggregate and in anecdote. And I think that we need to take another step to feel and understand or respond to the feelings of the people we're serving. Oftentimes they are our customers, but I say people we serve because it could be customers, partners, suppliers, you know, anyone that's involved in the business, donors. And we need to do this in a thoughtful and systematic way. And that's exactly where the empathetic positioning process comes in. It helps marketers to activate empathy. And we do this through these three phases. The process does this through three phases. I call them the three C's. It's easy to remember. It's curiosity, clarity, and connection. So the curiosity piece is all about asking questions internally and externally, bringing all the voices to the table to understand the goals, values, and needs of both the internal stakeholders as well as the external audiences. And I find when I really dive into that, you find some new nuances. Not everyone internally is speaking about the goals and values of the company in similar ways. So bringing everyone together, putting aside assumptions is really a big part of curiosity so that you can ask questions with a really open mind and then use all of that information to bring us to the next C, which is clarity. And that's really where we marry up the goals and the values and the needs of the organization with the people that you serve, which brings us to the third C, which is connection. So once you have this clarity, and the clarity really is like it's overlap. It's kind of where the magic happens between the internal and the external. So the connection is about taking all of this clarity, or another way of thinking about it is like clarified emotional intelligence, and designing strategies and messages that really connect with the people you serve. So that's it. That's the empathetic positioning process at sort of the very highest level. And then I work with clients one-on-one through consulting, but also through workshops to teach them this process so that they can make it a part of their cultures, as well as a part of how they design their marketing strategies and their marketing plans.
I love that. And I really love that middle C. I mean, the first one, of course, curiosity. You know, for me, that's so much of my work, which is just talking about why curiosity drives understanding, because of course it does. But the middle one I find really fascinating. So you're talking about clarity. This afternoon, I was with a group talking about clarify, which of course is, you know, same, same, but different. And we were talking about the use of the phrase, let me ensure I've understood you correctly, and really clarifying with people. Let me understand, I've understood that. Is this what you were saying? So that people have the opportunity to say, actually, no, what I was actually saying was this. And what you're doing is that from a marketing sense, you're doing that from a brand point of view. You're allowing that brand to check that they're connecting with their consumers and their customers in a sort of authentic and powerful way, which is, I mean, I love that. I think you must be seeing some really interesting feedback and response from that in the market.
I sure am. And you're absolutely right. The clarity piece is clarifying in the sense that sometimes you have people from the same team who have very different ideas about a direction. But when you bring those external voices to the table, it neutralizes that because now everyone is looking at their decisions things through the lens of the people they serve. And I've seen it so many times where teams are sort of wrestling with, you know, how do we go about this? You know, everyone has sort of differing opinions about, you know, the next step, the next direction, or the right strategy to take. And then you come in and you say, but this is what your customers are actually, this is what they need and what they value beyond just your product. They don't care as much about your product. They care about their own personal values, needs, and goals. How are you serving them? And that creates a whole different conversation, and it elevates and creates collaboration in a really powerful way.
And definitely, I mean, you talked about collaboration, you talked about culture. Obviously, we're talking about marketing. It really is all encompassing. And again, this is a conversation that we just need to be having more often, because I think people are missing the power of how, you know, the wide power of how this can change organizations. Now, when we don't have it, when an organization is missing its empathy, of course, it hits the news often. We see PR nightmares. We see brands that stop growing, or, you know, once were famous and then go backwards. But I mean, what happens if you don't have empathy? What's the risk? Why should people be concerned about not having empathy?
Well, there are various risks. I mean, certainly, you know, just looking back at this pandemic year, there are so many opportunities to connect and to pivot to understand people's feelings. But I think the risk is there are a few risks. I think one is the danger of losing trust. I think trust is such a foundation of empathy. So, you know, just the wrong tweet or the wrong message that gets out there that really is insensitive to what someone is going through right now. I think we see that a lot in the diversity, equity, inclusion space, where marketers and communicators in general are trying to reach people in a way that is authentic and that meets them, you know, exactly where they are and makes them feel seen, heard. And I think that that is a risk, is that if we're not proceeding with curiosity, if we're not asking the questions about what's on people's minds right now, then we might be 3 months behind in what we're doing, right? Because marketing takes a while to roll things out. We all know there's a plan and then you have all the steps that go along. But when your whole culture is operating from a place of empathy, before someone hits the tweet button, they're looking at that tweet and saying to themselves, is this empathetic? Is this reaching people? Is this, you know, so anyone in the organization at any level can be empowered to be empathetic and be thinking about their work through that lens.
Absolutely. And I mean, beyond the marketing world. Not beyond the marketing world, but beyond the output of the marketing, I should say. Mm-hmm. How do marketers as people make this shift? So you've touched on the actual marketing and the process and, you know, talking mm-hmm. to consumers, those types of things. But I'm a senior marketer in an organization. I want to become more empathetic. I want to create that culture. What do they do? They listen to you today. They're like, this lady, Marissa, she's got it right. What do they do next? How do they do that?
Right. So first of all, I think you hit the nail on the head. They need to want to do it. So they need to get intentional about empathy and say, this is something I want to bring into my organization. But just like anything you want to do as a marketer, you need to develop the systems to support that. So how are you going to do this in a scalable way? And that's what the empathetic position process allows you to do, because it allows you to identify who you need to speak to, what types of questions you want to be asking them, both internal stakeholders, external customers, and then bringing all of that together through this process allows for this to becomes a system that's in your organization that you can then direct towards a particular business outcome. So whether it's, I want to grow my audience to a new audience, or I want to grow market share of a particular product, I want to launch a new product in the market. So there's a lot of different applications. So I think getting a lot of clarity around the outcomes you're ultimately looking for, and then building a strategy based on empathy will help you get there. So I know there's a lot more detail to the empathetic positioning process, which we unfortunately don't have a ton of time for today, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of a flavor, but I'm happy to answer, you know, more questions.
What I think is really useful about it is that it sort of gives a methodology or a systemized approach to how we incorporate this. And one of my sort of peeves is when people talk about empathy as a soft skill. What do you think? I know you have an opinion on that.
Oh, you know I do. And I'm in the same camp as you are. I don't think it's a soft skill because I have measured it time and time again. In fact, I did a project last year with a global manufacturer, and they were looking to double their market share of a product. And the product was doing pretty well in Europe, but it was challenged in the Americas, but it needed to serve both markets. They couldn't really segment the product. So they brought me in to help with that. that. And it was a really rewarding project for me because it brought all of these parties to the table. And I'm answering your question in the sense that we were able to kind of address all of these differing points of view and bring everyone in and really let them understand what their customers needed. And it just completely neutralized the conversation around Europe needs this and America needs this. And this brought everyone together. So back to your point about the, you know, business outcome, really there was a business outcome in the sense that I've already learned that they are, that the new product has been received well in the market and that it's on its way to achieving its market share goals. So if that isn't proof, exactly, if that is not proof that empathy is not a soft skill, then I don't know what is, because it was designed to meet a certain objective and all of the pieces in place have improved their culture, have created greater collaboration, and has ultimately created a product that their customers around the globe want, not just one particular market.
Absolutely. And it is. I mean, it's got hard indicators, hard results. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, this is not easy or soft when it comes to mastering it. You know, it's hard to master. It's hard to find. So, you know, I really hope that very soon this whole idea of soft skills and empathy being one of them, you know, disappears. Before we totally close today, I want to just ask you outside of the business world. So you're a mum. What do you think about teaching our children, and particularly after the year they've all had? Is this something you teach in your family? Is it something you've ever seen in the school system? Should it be in the school system? What do you think as a parent?
Yes. Well, of course, as a parent, this is very much front of mind for me. I'm a mom of a 15-year-old. And, you know, I've been able to watch over these 15 years just how we prove to myself that we are born with this capacity for empathy. You know, I see that in my son, but I also see that society can chip away at that with cynicism and divisiveness and just a lot of distraction that sometimes we lose sight of empathy. So I believe firmly, you know, very much so, that we should be modeling empathy with our children on a regular basis and celebrating when we see them treating others empathetically with compassion and kindness, of course. But as far as, you know, really practicing it in our family, you know, there are often times when I can open a news story and we will talk about it together and just do perspective taking. You say, you know, why did this person behave this way? I can do this now. He's 15. So there's a lot of news that, you know, that he can sort of wrap his head around. But even with younger children, there you have that opportunity to do perspective taking. Why do you think Jane behaved this way on the playground? And how did you observe that? And so I think just opening those conversations, and you say it all the time, like the more we talk about empathy, the more empathy we will see in the world. I'm not sure I'm getting the words exactly right, but I think we talk about, the more we can talk about it with our children, certainly the more empathetic our world will be. And yes, there is a place for exactly what I described in classrooms. And I hope to see, and I've seen some curriculum and things floating around there about, and I hope to see more of that.
Yeah, me too. I've been doing some work as an ambassador for a platform called Empathy Week, which is out of the UK, so out of Britain, but they're, you know, doing more and more on a global stage to do exactly that. You should look them up. I mean, fascinating work, but exactly what you just said, to imbue empathy into the school systems over a period of time, mm-hmm. from, I think, 5 years old. So by the time they get to 15, 16, 17, 18, they've had 10 years of opportunity to practice, to take perspectives, to observe, you know, in a way that actually really sort of creates that habit. Because you're right, society can chip away at it. And today I was in a workshop when someone asked me, how on earth do you ever expect to solve this, Mimi? You know, the problems are too big, and, you know, on and on. And I said to them, this is not something we can do tomorrow. You know, this is after 30 years of declining empathy, this is a change that all of us have to commit to over time. And certainly helping our children evolve in that is a massive step. So again, you and I share all those opinions there. So let's wrap up with a question about you so that we can have a little bit more empathy for Marissa. Tell us, if you could share breakfast with one person or some people right now, who would it be? Where would you go? And what would you have?
It's been a wild year, right? And I don't know that you and I would even be on this call together had it not been for the year that was. I just feel like I've been able to meet people from all over and on this empathy journey. And I've met so many really interesting people that I would love to bring together in one cafe somewhere for breakfast. You would be at the top of the list for sure, Mimi. I would love to meet you in person and talk about empathy and really dig into that. And I have a few other people people that kind of come to mind, Shelton Davis of the Empathy Lab, Lita Vey Niezink and Catherine Train of Empathic Intervision, Jamil Zaki, who I know you know, the author of The War for Kindness. I just think, I have a long list, but those are a few names that come to mind. I just think we having a giant empathy for breakfast would be so incredible. You asked about what I'd eat, right? So avocado toast and tea, that would make me very happy. maybe a beachy cafe and a more tropical place could be really fun. But I just think connecting with people in real life would be really amazing right now. So that maybe gives you a little bit of window into my world. I love all of the digital connections I've made over the past year, but I miss those hugs and can't wait to see more people in person.
Me too. And I mean, I love that. We probably would never leave breakfast. Breakfast would probably become lunch and then become dinner. We would probably have empathy for every meal. but yes, I mean, let's do that one day. Let's make that happen. So Marissa Latshaw, it's been such a pleasure to have you. I know you've got some upcoming workshops as well. So I'm going to put all the notes for that in the show notes so that people can find out how they can learn from you, how they can attend your workshops, how they can do more with the empathetic positioning process and bring more empathy into their marketing. But for now, thank you so much for joining me for breakfast. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, such a pleasure. The pleasure is all mine, Mimi. Thank you so much, really, for all you're doing in the world and spreading empathy.
And with that, another episode of the Empathy for Breakfast show comes to a close. I would like to thank IQ Films, who produced this episode, and DJ Ciel for my soundtrack and music. Do join me online to carry on the conversation. I'm incredibly active on Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter, at Mimi Nicklin. I would love to talk to you all more. Meanwhile, spread the word, share the empathy, because after all, the more the world talks about empathy, the more empathy the world will have. I'm Mimi Nicklin. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you again on the Empathy for Breakfast show.